Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. On today's Fresnolandia, we are joined by Giselle Medina and Omar S. Rashad, two Fresnoland reporters who have been diving into a lot of the immigration-related stories that we've been tackling over the last month. Thank you both for joining us today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, same here.
So we felt like it was a good time to dive into a lot of the reporting that both of you and some of your colleagues have done over the last month. And just to recap for some of our listeners, over the last month, if you are paying attention to anything in the world, you've probably noticed a pretty significant increase in immigration enforcement by federal officers over the last month, really starting with a raid at a Home Depot in Paramount, California, just outside of Los Angeles. And that sparked a wave of protests and counter-protests, and eventually the National Guard deployment in Los Angeles. And we've seen some reverberation of that activity up here in Fresno. And so I'm going to start with you, Giselle. Just starting at a broad level, ICE has always deported people under every single administration. This is not new. I remember during the days of President Obama, activists in the immigration world would call him the deporter in chief. But what makes the recent events of the last month feel different than previous times and administrations?
Yeah, I think really it first started with the Border Patrol operation that happened back in January in Kern County. And from there, it just became an uptick of immigration enforcement just around not just Kern County, but spread throughout the Central Valley and, of course, the broader United States. I think right now there's a specific White House directive that I've been following where they're trying to hit a target of 3,000 arrests per day. And a lot of local nonprofits here in Fresno and just community members are kind of just responding to that and are ramping up efforts to just make sure that they're warning communities about looming enforcement operations. Right now, I'm also paying attention to the fact that there was an announcement that NBC News first reported about, specifically ICE leading a plan called Operation At Large nationwide to just make sure that they're upticking more immigration arrests, even if that means not necessarily arresting criminals, but just people either at their homes, at Home Depots, or other places of work, in fields, at schools, at churches. And it's just been widespread since. Here in Fresno specifically, there's been lots of credible reports by rapid response networks. And because of that, people are in fear and people are just trying to navigate what enforcement looks like and how to respond from there.
So one of the things that was said early on was that they were going to target people with criminal records. How do we know who has a record when they're getting arrested? How do we know that information? How do we know that they're not targeting people with criminal records?
Yeah, we've seen in Los Angeles, some reporting out of Los Angeles, which suggests that not all the people who are being arrested are criminals. And I think, I don't know, if you speak to an immigration rights attorney or an immigration attorney, I think they will be quick to unpack what criminal even means in this context, because remaining in the U.S. and overstaying a visa, for example, or entering the U.S. without specific documentation is a civil offense. It's not a criminal offense.
Criminal is a catch-all. It could mean anything from unpaid parking tickets to a violent crime in your record. Omar, let me ask you, you were present at ICE and the ICE contractor GEO's downtown offices on Father's Day, where two men were detained by plainclothes officers. What can you share about both your experience of that situation and what you learned about ICE operations from watching that?
GEO Group is a private prison contractor, and not only do they run immigration detention facilities, but they also run the government's Intensive Surveillance Appearance Program, ISAP for short. And essentially, ISAP is a federal program which allows undocumented people to remain in their communities, especially if they have community ties or family ties. And it's meant so that ICE essentially can save money at the end of the day. It's been documented by ICE that it costs 50 times more to actually detain undocumented people in the U.S. in their detention facilities versus just allowing them to remain in their communities. And essentially what I saw on Sunday, June 15, at around 7:45 a.m., I was right outside GEO Group's downtown Fresno office on P Street. And essentially what I saw, and this happened in just 15 seconds, three Ford vehicles swerved to a stop right in front of this downtown Fresno office. And right as they came to a stop, I saw two undocumented men I'm assuming they're undocumented. Essentially, they were taken out of the office and they were muscled into a Ford SUV by what appeared to be federal authorities in plain clothes. And right after they were basically thrown in the back of this Ford SUV, the three vehicles sped off. And in this 15-second episode, I wasn't able to see identification. Like, none of the what appeared to be federal authorities were wearing vests that even said police, much less the agency that they are from. The vehicles that swerved to a stop in front of this office were unmarked. None of them said CBP or ICE.
Really, and opens the door to vigilantism. That's what it really does.
Yeah, I think that's something that Fresno has already experienced. We've had an incident, I want to say it was this spring, where Fresno police arrested two people who impersonated ICE. And in that case, they were wearing clothing that had police on it. And I think we're already dealing with a situation where it appears to be pretty easy to impersonate ICE or Customs and Border Protection. Now you add this element where you have plain clothes customs enforcement or immigration enforcement. Does that impact or perhaps make it even easier for people to impersonate federal immigration authorities? And I will say, just from the video that I took, and we published a story about this, only upon watching the video for the fourth or fifth time could I even spot that there were actually badges on the waists of these federal immigration officers. I also found that they were CBP. They weren't ICE. When I was reaching out to Customs and Border Protection and talking with a spokesperson of theirs, they outlined essentially how it was an ICE operation on Father's Day in Fresno. However, CBP agents are commonly asked to assist with those kinds of operations. And I think it was a situation where it draws a lot of parallels with what we saw in Los Angeles. Dodger Stadium apparently didn't allow CBP officers to go into the actual grounds of Dodger Stadium. And so you saw all these immigration authorities, and you saw reports come out of these immigration authorities just like right outside Dodger Stadium. And that was another instance where you saw CBP officers, not necessarily ICE. I do think it's worth at least acknowledging, like, ICE is in charge of these immigration enforcement activities. They're also being aided by other either parallel agencies or other agencies under DHS. Yeah.
And so something I thought that was interesting that came out of another story that you did is you talked to Sheriff John Zanoni, Fresno County Sheriff. You talked to Fresno Police Chief Mindy Casto about their perception on these immigration officers not identifying themselves. And could you talk a little bit more about that and also how they've related to ICE activities as well?
Yeah, and I think at the forefront, they kept emphasizing they're not enforcing immigration law. They're not out there trying to find undocumented people and take them to ICE or transfer them to ICE. That's not their central purpose or goal. And the crux of what they told me was they are concerned that there are plainclothes immigration authorities running around in Fresno arresting people. And essentially, one thing that both Zanoni and Casto outlined was concern with a potential blue-on-blue incident. Essentially, what if someone were to observe what they think is a kidnapping, essentially? There's no proper or clear identification on the part of federal immigration authorities. And what if they were to call in a kidnapping and the Fresno County Sheriff's or the Fresno Police Department officers report to that scene? And there's concern from both Zanoni and Casto that there could be a conflict. And they didn't talk through any specific scenarios, but just the mere concept is concerning and worrying to them. And Sheriff Zanoni even mentioned to me, and we quoted this in a story I wrote, it wouldn't be hard for a random bystander to just think, oh, did I just witness a kidnapping? Especially if these are unmarked vehicles that immigration authorities are using and there's no police vest identifying them as police. And they're in a dark t-shirt and jeans, and their shirt might be covering the small little badge on their waist. So I think you've got a lot of concern with the fact that it's not easy to identify immigration authorities, especially when they're just in plain clothes and no clear identification.
Omar, can you talk? There's a state bill that's trying to ban some components of plain clothes as a tactic. Can you talk about what that bill would prevent?
Yeah. So essentially, there's a state bill sponsored by Senator Wiener and Senator Ian that's working its way through the state legislature in California. And it's seeking to not allow law enforcement to wear masks I haven't heard too much from their offices in response to some questions that I sent them, but the little that I do know, just from a little bit of back and forth, is that they don't want this to impact law enforcement's privacy in a way that's detrimental to their operations, but they do want to, I think, rein in what feels like lawlessness, what feels like concern, what feels like, I think, just secret police. They're not identifying themselves and they're just essentially running around doing what they're doing. Now, it's unclear how this bill could change as it makes its way through the legislature. It sounds like its sponsors are open to ways to essentially amend this bill so that it could get passed, but also it's not so that it's not detrimental, for example, local law enforcement who are doing either undercover or are doing plainclothes enforcement, because the bill is pretty general as it's currently written. And then the other aspect of this that I'm personally not too clear on is how a state bill could actually enforce regulations on federal law enforcement. I think I'm still waiting to hear back clearly from the sponsors' offices on how that could actually take shape and also what the enforcement mechanism would be.
You guys have both talked to a ton of immigration attorneys over the last month as the events have continued to unfold. And I'm just curious if you could both talk about what you've heard from the attorneys about how the way enforcement is done has changed and what we've seen as a shift in sort of the tactics that are used to detain people.
So I think what we've seen from, or at least what I've heard from immigration attorneys and immigration rights attorneys, is that they think ICE is basically engaging in scare tactics, engaging in trying to drum up fear. And it's specifically observable when ICE pulls up to ISAP check-in offices and are taking undocumented people who show up to mandatory surveillance check-ins. And we've seen this across the country, not just in Fresno. I think Fresno is an example of that. And this is really similar to how you have immigration authorities who are waiting outside courtrooms, waiting to arrest or detain undocumented people after they show up to their court hearings. And I think very famously, recently, we saw Brad Lander get apprehended in New York, mayoral candidate who was accompanying undocumented people attending their court hearings. And I think what attorneys have shared, at least with me, is that they think this is a scare tactic. They think this is to instill fear. And I think most importantly is how attorneys are identifying how immigration authorities are apprehending the people who are actually doing exactly what they're told to do. And they are not necessarily going after the targets who are hardest to arrest. And they think that it's a huge issue that they're going after people who just are following the orders that they get. Yeah.
What I'm hearing from immigration attorneys that I've been in contact with for months now is that specifically if like local police aren't cooperating with ICE, either whether that's because of state policy or because they don't want to, there tends to be more frequent ways that they're targeting individuals, whether that's through going to someone's home. But like specifically here in Fresno, I've been hearing a lot of people are being stopped on the street, whether they're going somewhere or maybe they're a vendor, but also like a lot of people are being stopped when they're driving. And if they have a Spanish-sounding last name, then they're more of a target and it's more of racial profiling. So that's what I've been hearing.
Giselle, you've been talking with a lot of local groups about how they're planning to handle a suspected increase in immigration enforcement, but we haven't really seen in Fresno the scale of enforcement that we've seen in LA or in San Francisco. What activity have we seen so far? And is there an expectation that what's happening in LA is still yet to come in Fresno?
I think a lot of local groups here, based on my conversations with them, have been staying in constant communication with each other as like every day, like kind of new things are happening. But also they're working together to mobilize and even like actually volunteering with rapid response networks to one, be a dispatcher when they're out in the field and like taking notes about immigration enforcement reports and like seeing if they are verified or not. And they go through this specific like legal observing training to do. So I'm seeing a lot of that. But then I'm also seeing that like they're continuing to spread awareness just about these hotlines and these other resources. They're hosting still Know Your Rights workshops, but then they're also hosting like protest trainings to like if immigration enforcement becomes more rapid and just more increased, that if there are more protests, which there are going to be next month and continuing to move forward, people can make sure that they stay safe. And if immigration enforcement does happen to go to a protest, that like people, there'll be a good group of people who will know what to do in that situation. They're also like making sure that these specific local groups are connected to attorneys who can, they can get people who may be affected be connected to attorneys who are offering like free consultations to those affected and maybe help with like family preparedness plans in case detention may happen. But in terms of like verified reports here in Fresno, I know that Faith in the Valley's hotline and the Central Valley Rapid Response Network as a whole has been having these verified reports, and as they happen, they are on social media making sure that people are aware that's going on. But right now they don't really tend to track like the specifics as to if someone is detained, what that looks like really specifically, but they have some data.
Yeah, the next question's interesting because it's really broaching this subject of like how we consume information and where we get it. Because we'll see stuff on social media that will make claims, and we can talk, this is not a social media claim, but we can talk about Miguel Arias's claims that the Cherry Auction was going to be raided and that never materialized. So I guess the question is, how should we think about consuming information on social media? What to latch on to, what to take seriously, what to not take seriously? How do we, as journalists, comb through that? And I bring this up because I found these like really fascinating YouTube accounts recently where you have these like small production studios that create a fictitious but almost perfectly real looking someone serving a warrant. And it shows police officers doing shady things, but then you comb down and you say, this is just a fictionalized representation of what took place. And so there's all these like proliferation of like outrage accounts that are trying to pull our attention. And so it seems like it's a pretty big task to figure out what's true and what's not. So how should we think about approaching that as we are on social media looking through stuff?
Yeah, I think someone who has a platform here in Fresno or just in general, if someone who has that platform hears even a hint that immigration enforcement presence can potentially materialize in whatever way that is, I think that person sharing the news publicly is important, but I think they should be cautious and aware of the way that they word that to make sure that they are not like spreading fear about it. And I feel like specifically with Arias, there's been a lot of like mixed feelings as to like how he made that announcement at a city council meeting about the potential ICE presence at the Cherry Auction that weekend. I'm hearing from like local nonprofits such as Rosa Against War and the May 1st Coalition in a recent press conference where they were advocating for businesses to stand up for immigrant communities. They said that they supported him sharing that potential ICE enforcement because they were like, it's good that like he did that to make sure that, yeah, people, if they can, make sure that they're not there, just to not be there and to be aware. And
they could have deterred ICE. They could have planned something and then the announcement deterred the operation. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. And he doesn't know if that's true or not. But I think that
And he took a lot of heat for saying that from a lot of journalists,
yeah,
locally.
No, definitely.
I can't remember what the Fresno Bee's headline was, but something to the effect of they were really taking him to task for spreading what they said was an untrue rumor. And I think that, and I talked to Arias later after the fact, and he was like, this is the trade-off. Sometimes you have information, you can't always disclose where you have it. And if it's going to put the community in jeopardy, you have to share and take the hits.
Exactly. It's similar to social media posts like in the beginnings of January, where a lot of people were sharing, oh, there's ICE presence in these specific cross streets or Border Patrol presence in these specific cross streets. I think like it's not good to spread fear in a negative way, but I think a warning and just making sure that you're communicating that like this, like the way that you know that information is just very important and vital.
And so how should like everyday person that's just on social media trying to be aware of what's going on with this? How should they like consume their media? Is it just cautions, picking specific accounts that are have more credibility?
I think just following specifically rapid response networks where there's a bunch of volunteers who are actively in the field taking verified reports and like understanding like, okay, this is a way to confirm immigration enforcement presence or not. I think just following those accounts like Faith in the Valley is very important just to make sure that you're aware, but also immigration attorneys and immigration organizers who have been a part of immigration resources and stuff for as long as they have, I think it's important to look up to them and to listen to them.
Yeah, and I think Giselle's really hitting on this really important point. We have somewhat of an ecosystem right now. In the last 5 months, I think there has been a growing ecosystem of people who care about what's going on and who are organizing in a thoughtful way. And I think depending on those volunteers, on those organizations, including Faith in the Valley, I think is a first avenue that I think most folks should probably gravitate towards. And then I think that the next thing is ask other people questions or ask those organizations questions before maybe necessarily sharing something on your Instagram story or tweeting something out. I think being careful about what you share and ensuring that, hey, is there corroboration of at least two other people who witnessed this before maybe sharing it on your Instagram story? Because I think that caution or that refrain is thoughtful in a few ways. You don't want to create fear without first at least confirming, are there other people who witnessed this firsthand? And are the organizations who are really taking charge and wanting to keep the community informed, are they informed? Do they know that so-and-so incident happened? So I think that's really worth doing. Yeah, we have an ecosystem. It's worth relying on that.
The president has said that he plans to target immigration enforcement in Democratic-ran cities. And honestly, I'm not entirely sure if Fresno is a Democratic-ran city. I know obviously our mayor is Republican, but we have a Democratic majority on the city council. Fresno tends, I know Fresno County voted for Trump, but I actually have not seen the data to see if the city of Fresno voted for Trump this time around. So are the folks that you guys are talking to, do they have a sense of whether Fresno gets lumped into this democratically ran cities, or are we a little bit under the radar because of our political ambiguity?
Yeah, I think the first thing you said.
Okay.
I guess the way that I'm thinking about this question is I'm thinking about the story I wrote about how the Department of Homeland Security created this list of like more than 500 cities and counties and states that are considered like sanctuary jurisdictions that could face like funding cuts for not cooperating with federal immigration authorities. Specifically, like Fresno never declared itself a sanctuary city. I mean, like Fresno County itself, like the sheriff pushed for increased cooperation with ICE, wasn't included on the list. And when I'm thinking about that, and I'm thinking about like when I reached out to the Department of Homeland Security like spokesperson, and they listed, okay, here's what we classify as like a sanctuary jurisdiction. Like they're talking about, okay, like the locality of the location, but also the limit of cooperation with federal immigration enforcement and like the restriction of like information sharing or like even protecting or providing like legal protections for immigrants. So I think when I'm thinking about Fresno, like I'm thinking about how, okay, maybe specifically like local law enforcement aren't necessarily cooperating with immigration enforcement, but we do have a Republican mayor, but yeah, we do have the Fresno County sheriff who wants a push for increase in cooperation with ICE. I wouldn't say Fresno is being treated as a Democratic ran city to an extent. Like it is in the sense of there's a lot of people here on the ground who are fighting for immigration rights, including attorneys and organizers, and even like city council members who are just trying to watch out and protect their citizens, such as Arias when he made that statement during the city council meeting. But yeah, but then again, there's, yeah, it's Fresno County itself voted for Trump. So it's like there's an in-between here. And I think it's really what's more important about this is like, if when there is going to be increased enforcement, as I've heard from immigration attorneys, people just need to be prepared and to make sure that they're protecting themselves and others and just continuing to move forward and fight the fight.
Yeah, I wonder if Fresno's associated with California, and so then it's lumped into a sanctuary kind of region in some ways.
I think that's what's so interesting about the list that Giselle mentioned from the Department of Homeland Security that they reported on a few weeks ago, where it was this very, in our view, arbitrary list, because Fresno was on it as a sanctuary city, which Fresno has never declared itself a sanctuary city. Fresno County was not on the list. Huntington Beach was on the list, and if California politics, that might be surprising to you. Yeah. Giselle mentioned the things that they were looking for, and it just didn't feel like they had a very clear criteria. They ended up deleting the list and have moved on to other. Now they're just going after democratically run cities.
And they're going after LA now. I do think part of it is if it's big enough to get attention, then that will probably narrow his eyes onto a particular city.
Truly.
So we end these podcasts in the same place every week with what we're loving this week. I'm going to go ahead and start us off. My wife loves Formula One. We were on vacation and we both got, I think we ate salads or something and got food poisoning. And so we were trapped in our hotel room. And this was about a year and a half ago. And we were combing through the TV and found this Netflix docuseries called Drive to Survive, which was about Formula One. I was just like playing chess on my phone, but my wife was like zeroed in and she became obsessed. Now we watch qualifying, we watch practice races, which I didn't even think you could watch that on TV, but apparently you can. And so there was a lot of hype in my household for the F1 movie with Brad Pitt. Now the movie was fine. I think I could feel Brad Pitt taking certain scenes off, but the racing in that movie, and we saw in IMAX, was incredible. Like it was like jarring almost. It almost felt like how like Martin Scorsese has called some Marvel movies like theme parks. Like this felt like the best kind of theme park because you were just in the car. And there's not a lot of CGI. It feels like they really attached cameras to the cars, and so you could really feel the energy in the ride. And I loved it.
Okay.
It was fantastic.
That's good to know.
I just want something mindless, like summer blockbuster with pretty people and loud sounds, and I got it. So
I'm not unconvinced that F1 is NASCAR with a new, like, cooler veneer.
I've got the catchphrase. It's NASCAR with caviar. Giselle, what are you loving this week?
Ooh, two things. Both shows. I just watched Ink Master for the first time. I've never seen it. It's just
tattoo show?
Yep, tattoo show. I watched like season 8 super randomly because it's my partner's favorite season. I have tattoos. I love tattoos, but I have a much more appreciation for tattoos after watching the show because these artists are coming from around the US and like they're competing to be the next Ink Master. And just the way they think through their art and the way they think through techniques, which is very fascinating to me. Like, it just wasn't something I've ever really thought of because my tattoos, like when I think about my tattoos, they're very like dainty and very personal to me, but like for them, it's that, but also just all these other different elements. And I don't know, it was just fascinating to me. I've also been really loving the Bears' latest season. I just caught up, like I never seen it. I watched all 3 seasons within the span of maybe 2 weeks.
Whoa.
To prepare.
And that's like that's for like this a super, super intense show. So you're probably
it's so beautifully done. I'm such a big film and show nerd in the sense of I really live for dissecting different stylistic choices and just character development and all that stuff. And not to spoil anything, but I've only watched the first 2 episodes of the new season. It's so good right now.
That's amazing. I'm so excited for it. I love that show. Mm-hmm. It's hard. Bravo for plowing through that, because that show it takes work to watch it.
No, honestly, there was moments where I'm like, oh wow.
Yeah, it brought me back to working in a kitchen and like people screaming at me and their fire and knives. Omar, what are you loving this week?
Yeah, also a TV show, but one from 3 decades ago.
This must be Fresno during the summer because we're all loving TV shows and movies.
Yeah, no. So ER,
What?
A great TV show that I absolutely love.
Okay.
I'm on season 7 of ER right now.
I am so here for this.
Early baddie George Clooney.
Yeah.
Noah Wiley. Come on.
Yeah. Noah Wiley. George Clooney, who looks the same 30 years ago as he does now. Like, I just don't understand that.
Same.
And there have been, oh my gosh, there have been so many cameos of actors who I just absolutely love, and I have this like long like notes list. Whenever I see somebody that I see like that I know from something else, I just make a list.
I love that you have a list on your phone.
Ewan McGregor, Omar Epps, Lucy Liu, Eva Mendes.
What?
We've got Ashley Johnson, who voiced Ellie in The Last of Us.
Okay.
Young like child Shia LaBeouf.
Really?
Okay.
We've got
as a patient maybe.
Yeah, as a patient. Gabrielle Union.
Oh, like, I love her.
And yeah, I've got like 20 actors' names on this notes list that I just pulled up.
But ER is everyone's stepping stone into their career, maybe.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's like the minor leagues. Wow.
I know.
But yeah, it's been
so
a great time.
So it holds up. It still feels like I could pick it up today and just be transported.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think the most interesting thing is just, I guess, the cultural shifts of like how people talk about different subjects and being sensitive about, I guess, what's acceptable to say. I think obviously things have changed in the last 3 decades, and I probably can't think of a super specific example, but I've heard a few words get thrown around. I'm like, whoa, no way. Hold on.
Are you also a Grey's Anatomy person?
No, I'm
okay,
not.
Okay, so
and
okay.
I've heard plenty of criticism about how ER is like much more accurate when it comes to the medical field, when it comes to medical procedures, but ER has plenty of like personal relationship drama, and also like delves so much into like issues in the medical industry and issues with insurance and tackling different problems that have come up in that industry. And it also tackles like careerism. Like, we want to do things for patients or the people that we serve, but at the same time, you have several doctors wrestling with like, how do I advance my career at the same time? And yeah, the interests of both those concepts are not necessarily always in line. So I feel like it's been interesting watching how they dissect
that. I'm sold. I never really got into the original series.
Man.
I've been looking at the weather app, so it looks like it's ER time.
It's ER time.
Really get hot.
It is definitely ER time.
Donnie, what are you loving this week?
My son plays soccer, and he is in an indoor soccer league, Fresno Indoor Soccer. Have you guys ever played indoor soccer?
No.
I think once or twice. It's a lot more intense.
It is so intense. I liken it to soccer meets hockey, because you have these like glass walls, and because there is no out of bounds unless you kick the ball into the ceiling, you're basically like using your body force to push people against walls to steal the ball away from them. I'm just watching a bunch of 10 and 11 year olds play. Like, I'm not actually playing, but I was there. I'm there on Saturday mornings now, and I'm just like, I want to go in. Let me in. I want to play so bad. And they have loud music, and it's great music, and it's just a good fun time.
That sounds a lot better for being a spectator, indoor soccer, as opposed to outdoors.
I know, my poor
kid
like got booted in the stomach on Saturday from the goalie from the opposing team. And I'm like, you're fine. And he's like about to cry. And he's, I was so scared playing the rest of the game. And hit him in the walls. Joaquin. Anyway.
Sounds gnarly.
It is.
This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinan. And our song comes from Stateless Rat.